Chapter 4. Fal. Orbital. The final wall has fallen. After they were spoken, the words became a silence strong as iron, heavy as death. It spread over the council hall of the Abhorrence. It seemed to Corlan that he could sense the silence spreading down all the corridors of the battle barge. It was the silence that followed the tolling of a funeral bell. He had made real a defeat so great that for the chapter masters before him until this moment it had been unimaginable. The fact that it had occurred opened the door to other terrible possibilities. The silence lasted for a full minute. The Black Templars, the Crimson Fists, the Excoriators, and the Fists Exemplar, represented in the persons of Beaumont, Cassandra, Issachar, and Thane, looked back at Corland, and he did not represent the Imperial Fists. He was the Imperial Fists. He was alone. As the silence pressed down, dense with loss, and Corland saw the expressions of pity, horror, and sorrow around the council table, his survival felt like a curse. He existed to spread the word of an extermination more complete than even the worst atrocities of the heresy. How did he imagine that he, an avatar of disaster, could pretend to have authority over the assembled chapter masters? Even Thane, so recently elevated to that rank, still commanded a powerful force. Corland must appear to them as the voice of the abyss. No, he told himself, be the voice of experience, of necessity, of unity. Be anything less, and they will dismiss you. Beaumont spoke first.
Your loss, Second Captain Corland, is beyond words. Nonetheless, please accept the profound sorrow of the Black Templars. We honour the victories and the sacrifices of your brothers.
Corland would have liked to receive the wish at face value. However, he had to take notice of the deliberate use of rank, possibly a preemptive gesture designed to keep him in his place. If so, he would have to disappoint the chapter master.
You have my thanks, Marshal, as do the rest of you, my brothers.
He meant what he said, but he was also choosing his phrasing with care, emphasizing that he was among peers. He remained standing.
Let me further express my thanks that you have all answered the call to the last wall. I sent out the signal because what befell the Imperial Fists must be our spur to action. None of us needed that spur, Beaumont said.
Corland bowed his head.
I did not mean to suggest that you did. Then what did you mean to suggest?
Cassandra asked. His voice was calm, but the words were sharp. His gaze on Corland was scouring.
What has fallen must be rebuilt. Together we shall be the bricks of an even greater wall. Which is to say, we must do more than act in concert. There have already been disasters, thanks to inadequate communications. This must end.
All four of the chapter masters were nodding.
It is therefore vital that our united efforts be coordinated by a single command.
Another silence followed, this one coloured by surprise. Corland remained standing a few more seconds. He tried to find a balance, conveying authority but not giving offence. Then he sat and awaited the reaction. He did not yet have the measure of the warriors he was addressing. He suspected that he might find a sympathetic ear in Thane, who at least had experienced some parallel loss and sudden unwanted elevation. Issachar was hard to read, though he gave no sign of actual hostility. Cassandra's gaze had grown even sharper. It now flicked between Corland and Beaumont. The Black Templar's face had taken on a determined cast, as one about to do battle. Behind the chapter masters, their honour guards were as motionless as ever, but the rising tension gave the air a brittle taste. Cassandra said,
You are proposing a step of very far-reaching implications. Some might see it as an attempt to recreate the Legion. That is not my intent. There would be no change in banners or colours. We would be the individual fingers forming a single fist for the duration of the crisis. History is rife with provisional measures that became permanent.
Brother, Issachar said to Cassandra,
Do you seriously believe any of the men under your command would seek to surrender their identity as Crimson Fists? No. The same is true for the Excoriators.
Courland couldn't tell if Issachar was supporting his proposal or pointing out its unworkability.
Beaumont said,
Second Captain Courland is correct, though. The Orcs have the unity and direction that we lack. A divided Imperial response is doomed. We have too much evidence of that already.
And the Fists' exemplar, said Thane, have direct experience of the virtues of combined efforts. Marshal Beaumont convinced me, I'm happy to say, of the pointlessness of fighting alone and in a lost cause.
Courland nodded.
I wish we had had such a chance. I'm not disputing the need for coordination,
Issachar said.
I am questioning the viability of the second captain's proposed integration. If we are to have a single command, who will be that commander?
The third silence. A short one. Courland said nothing. He wondered if, when duty had called him to Terra, he had been contaminated by the political maneuvering of the High Lords. He wanted to be direct. He wanted to state what was necessary. But his position was weak. He had to think tactically. He waited for Beaumont to speak first, as Courland knew he would.
The coordination of joint operations and the recall of Crusades has been through the Black Templars,
Beaumont said.
Continuity should be preserved.
Cassandra eyed him.
So the command will be yours?
Yes.
Beaumont was being as direct as Courland could not be.
I see.
Issachar was still carefully neutral.
And what would your campaign plan be?
To take the war to the Orcs. We cannot think in terms of defending systems. We will attack the star fortresses, beginning with the nearest.
As simple as that?
Cassandra asked.
There is no front, said Thane.
Exactly.
Beaumont continued to address them all, rather than answer Cassandra directly.
The Orc bases are appearing everywhere. They are not advancing along any discernible path. We cannot think in terms of blocking them. We must attack to eradicate.
You are proposing a crusade on a scale that we haven't seen in living memory.
Issachar sounded impressed.
And what of Terra? Thane asked. It is defenseless. There is no wall there any longer. Admiral Lansung has been keeping his precious navy out of harm's way. As much as I am disgusted by his actions in the Asperia system, they have had the effect of preserving his strength. If Terra is attacked, there will be more than enough vessels readily at hand. Our move must be to await the arrival of our fleets and then attack. We will be abandoning countless systems to their fates. Those losses are inevitable. Better to pull our forces from hopeless battles to forge them into a weapon that can actually win.
Thane didn't look happy. But Courland couldn't disagree with the premises behind Beaumont's strategy. He thought Cassandra and Issachar were on board as well. The problem was that any unity between the chapter masters of the Crimson Fists and the Black Templars would be provisional. At the first opportunity, Cassandra would challenge Beaumont's command. There was accord on a single tactical decision, not on the larger question of leadership. The discussion moved towards the finer issues of deployment and the choice of target. The closest Orc moon was in the Alustar system. Courland took part in the discussion, but did not try to drag it back towards the crucial issue. Now was not the moment. There would be some time before the other ships arrived, time he could use to convince the chapter masters, his brothers, of the path that must be taken. It wasn't the need for glory that pushed him. He was resigned to the fact that all glory for him was in the past. In the future lay only atonement, and the struggle to keep the doom that had fallen upon the Imperial Fists from also striking down the Imperium. It was also more than his experience with the Orcs that urged his claim. Thane had at least as much direct contact with the enemy. It was more, too, than the position of the Imperial Fists as foundational chapter. The leadership of this crusade could not rest on something as intangible as a simple right of seniority. As he read the currents of power and rivalry in the Council Hall, he realized the vital uniqueness of his position. He was chapter master without a chapter. There was no agenda for him to push, nothing to seek for his warriors. He could present a perfect disinterest. There would be no partiality to his decisions. The only dictates would be the needs of the campaign. He would fight, for what had to be. But for the moment, the terrain was not his to contest. At the conclusion of the council, Castellan Clermont escorted him to his quarters. He did not stay in them long. He taught himself the layout of the abhorrence and learned where the other delegations were stationed and where the Black Templars had put Magos biologist Phaeton Laurentis. He looked for encounters of opportunity. He had one when he found Cassandra alone in an observation chamber. It was one of the smaller ones on the ship, constructed in the form of a chapel. Rows of iron pews sat before the stained glass viewport. Fal Primus dominated the perspective. The gas giant's bands of colour were filtered and changed by the tinting of the viewport. Above the frame was an inscription: "The galaxy transformed by the hand of the Emperor." Cassandra stood close to the viewport. The tapestry of colours washed over the deep blue of his armour and the bloody hue of his left gauntlet. He glanced over his shoulder at Corland.
"Our brothers, the Black Templars, have taken to heart the full conception of a crusade," he said.
The implied worship of the setting disturbed Corland.
"Yes,"
he said noncommittal. He wasn't sure what Cassandra's views on the matter were, and a doctrinal dispute would serve no purpose. He joined the Crimson Fist at the viewport.
"You don't think Beaumont should be leading us?" Cassandra said.
"I don't."
"And who would you prefer in his stead? Yourself?"
"It isn't a question of preference."
"Oh, one of destiny, is it?"
"I didn't say that either."
"Do you deny it?"
Corland chose his words with care.
"It doesn't matter whether it is destiny or chance that has placed me in this position. What is important is the position itself."
"Is this what you intend to say to Marshal Beaumont? I doubt he'll be receptive."
Cassandra snorted.
"You might challenge him to a duel for the leadership if you aren't too attached to your right arm. Issachar might have thoughts for you."
Corland wasn't amused by the reference to the Excoriator's bionic limb.
"If that's what it takes, I will."
"You're serious?"
"The High Lords have failed the Imperium with their trivial, self-interested political struggles. I would like to believe that the Adeptus Astartes are better than that."
Cassandra didn't answer at first.
"We should be,"
he said at last, thoughtful. Corland left the conversation there. Not long after, word came of the Imperial Navy's victory at Port Sanctus. The news confirmed the soundness of Beaumont's proposed strategy. It also made the wait even more frustrating, but the other fleets weren't far. Then, even as the mustering of four chapters began, the near space of Fal Primus filling with strike cruisers and battle barges, came the cry from Terra. The second meeting in the council hall was more solemn than the first. Beaumont briefed the other chapter masters on everything that was known.
"The orcs haven't attacked at last a port," he concluded.
"When they do," Issachar said, "there is no point pretending what the outcome will be, what with the bulk of the navy still at Port Sanctus."
"There are no forces close enough to help?" Thane asked.
"None," said Beaumont. He tapped the data slate on the table. "For all we know, the attack has already begun."
The worst truth, though unspoken, thundered. Terra may already have fallen. Now, Corland thought. He stood.
"Brothers," he said, "I wouldn't blame you if you regarded my arrival as an ill omen."
He paused, thinking of Lieutenant Greydove's religious awe. "The rest of the chapter perished, but you survived," he had said.
"That makes you not remarkable, but miraculous."
He did not share Greydove's belief, but he was duty-bound to accept that he was more than just a single space marine now. Being the last Imperial Fist made him a symbol, and one that had now taken on an even greater significance.
"We know better than that," Thane said. "You are not the cause of this catastrophe."
"No," Corland said, "but I can stand for it, and I will. The Imperial Fists do not exist outside of this chamber. The final wall has fallen, and now Terra is on the verge of falling too."
Then he chose to speak the obscene.
"Perhaps it has."
He paused again.
"But what I said a moment ago is a lie."
"How can it be?"
"Because the Black Templars stand. The Crimson Fists stand. The Excoriators stand. The Fists Exemplar stand. I stand. The Sons of Dawn in their thousands are gathering to begin their greatest crusade since the heresy. The Imperial Fists live on in me, in you, and in the war we are about to wage. If Terra falls, the Imperium must and will live on. We will avenge Terra. We will reclaim Terra and annihilate every last Xenos brute who has dared walk its surface.
He beat his fist once against his breastplate. He had not yet sought to have any repairs done to the visible damage on his armor. He used its scars now. When the successor chapter masters looked at him, they saw the worst thing that could happen, and they saw the survival beyond that worst thing.
I said that we must form a single fist with which to strike the orcs. So we shall. I will direct those blows. I claim this right not in my name or by any personal authority, but in the name of Rogel Dorn, and in the name of the Seventh Legion, whose spirit we uphold in our every act and thought.
He finished. He waited. Beaumont glared at him. The Marshal took a breath. He rose. Before he could speak, Thane stood also.
Brother,
he said to Corland. He walked around the table to stand before the Imperial Fist.
Chapter Master.
He held out his hand.
My captain.
He clasped forearms with Corland.
The Fist's Exemplar will be honored to follow you into combat.
Thank you, brother,
Corland said.
I see no fault in Chapter Master Corland's logic, Issachar said.
The Excoriator didn't stand. He was watching Beaumont and Cassandra.
The rights he speaks of are real. We are bound to acknowledge them. Besides, he continued without taking his eyes off the two rivals, I can't believe that he would be unwilling to listen to sound military advice.
Of course not, Corland said.
He wasn't sure if Issachar was completely convinced by his speech. His agreement might have been more pragmatic, a way of heading off conflict between the Black Templars and Crimson Fists. Cassandra was impassive. His eyes were hooded. The gaze that pried all secrets from others now hid the thoughts of its owner. All he said was,
Agreed.
Are you siding with me or sabotaging Beaumont? Corland wondered. He pushed his concerns about motivation to the side. What mattered was the result.
Beaumont mustered a grim smile. I will not break the unanimity at this table, he said.
Then he, too, walked around to grasp Corland's arm.
Lead us well, brother.
The implied test was clear. If Corland did poorly, what he had managed to create in the last few minutes would collapse. He accepted that condition. If he failed, he would deserve far worse. But was there an undercurrent of hope in the Marshal's tone? Corland thought there was. If he was right, then there would be real strength in the wall he was building. What he couldn't know was whether there would still be anything left for the wall to defend.